Hello, and welcome to this edition of the Discover Montcalm podcast. Today, we're going to do a new feature called Veteran Spotlight. We'll have more on that right after this.
The Discover Montcalm podcast thanks West Michigan Technology and Design Solutions, M106.3 WGLM, DW Video, Blueberry Podcast Platform, and Business Growth Engine. Thank you for your support.
Hello and welcome back to the Discover Montcalm podcast. As I said in the intro, that we're doing a segment now, or a series of segments, that we're going to do veteran spotlights. And today we've got Buck from the Sheridan VFW 5065 post. We have Cara from 106.3 FM in Greenville. And we have Steve Barnes, a vet. And we're going to spotlight you a little bit. And I had to have support here with these other two so that we made sure that we're going to pick on you.
Okay.
No, really, we're not. But I'd like to start, Steve, with your roots. Where did you grow up? And give me a little backstory before we get to the military stuff.
So I grew up in Cedar Springs, rural house and good upbringing, and biking back in the day when we drank from a garden hose and and come back when it was time to eat and gone all day. And graduated, I played drums in high school and graduated from there, worked for a year or two. Small jobs like Packsack and Sparta, and had always wanted to be a soldier. Always dreamt of being a GI.
Okay.
Played GI Joes, and so finally this wasn't all working out for me. I tried one whole semester of college. That wasn't a fit for me, so I went in the service. And
okay, let's start there. So you did some adulting after school. Decided that, and you wanted to get into the military. What branch of the military did you get into and why?
I was good with numbers and logistics. Always had been. Organizing, not to the extent of micromanaging, but I like order and structure. So I chose to be a quartermaster, went into clerical work, did my basic training at Fort Leonard Wood. Went straight from there to Fort Lee, Virginia, and did my MOS training to become a records and parts clerk, and then went to Fort Stewart, Georgia, 24th Infantry Division, mechanized, that's now the 3rd ID, and spent 2 years there with their division material management.
Okay. So what branch is that? I'm guessing it's Army?
Army.
Okay.
And what's MOS?
It was 76 Charlie turned to 92 Alpha.
So you talk about MOS, like,
what's MOS?
Military Occupational Skill.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
I find that when I'm
boy, at bringing
the
up
club,
the old acronyms, like,
yeah, definitely,
sometimes.
I don't know
definitely.
What that means.
Civilians.
So, they don't know that all that stuff now, Steve.
Well, and I do know of that because I have two nephews, one serving right now, one has gone and been out, and now in the Guards. So, you know, I get a little of that tech, but I'm like, okay. So that's good that we, as we go through this, that we touch on what these things mean. Because I know that Steve, you were talking earlier and you're throwing out things that you guys talk about
clearly
all the
you
time.
Understand. Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
You know,
but if you could help us here on the podcast by kind of given us a definition. So Buck is from the Sheridan VFW, and we did a feature on you.
Correct.
In a previous episode, and during that episode, Cara and I mentioned that we'd like to get into, you know, featuring some vets, and you grabbed it. So I'm going to turn the mic over to you.
Okay.
I mean, you know Steve probably
yep.
better than we do.
Mm-hmm.
Could you kind of direct Cara and I into what
he's playing me now?
Yeah. You know.
Well, if I could, Buck actually led the way. He was, I believe, an E6 when he went to Desert Storm.
Yep.
and he was in a different section than myself. But my position in the motor pool, I helped everybody. I get everybody everything they can. So I was, it, not because of me, but because of my position, that that kind of was the hub for the company and their, and some of their needs.
He's
not
the
all
guy to know.
Yes.
And, your stuff.
He would be.
And if I needed anything, I knew Buck knew where to go.
Oh,
and
you're the
guy. He was a people person too, yep. So we kind of hit it off right from the
bat. I was in retention in CO technically, and I always re-upped everybody, you know, and so I was kind of the go-getter. And like Steve said, I mean, I'm a people person. I talk a lot, for one thing. Mm-hmm. I get out to actually everywhere, because I was actually with the fire control and repair, which is working on tanks and howitzers and all that stuff. So, and then we and Steven, we met is because of the fact that we were both in the Army National Guard together. Mm-hmm. And we got real well, like he said.
Well, and Greenville's a very tight unit.
Okay.
Very tight. And back then it was pretty incredible, given the fact that it was one of the larger units you'd ever come across that was 240 strong.
Wow.
240 individuals.
For the guards.
For yeah. National Guards. For just one. Guards. Yep.
And
yep. When we're a maintenance company. We were a maintenance company.
A maintenance company. And the thing that we were able to hang our hat on when we went to Desert Storm, and Buck's section was still active. If it didn't fly or float, pretty much we could fix it, period.
Okay.
And the only standard we had is bring us what we can fix, and we'll tell you if we can or we can't.
Yeah.
And then we would rob from old bombed up vehicles and just make some stuff that really shouldn't.
Yeah. Because I went to on the road a lot, and it was what was that Air Force base there? Not King Fahd. Was it King Fahd?
Yeah.
Yes. So I went to King Fahd every single day. Well, I seen this bus that had seats in it. Well, I have basically the movie theaters like that. I was taking care of that. I'm saying
the
so. On one side we did cards, games, whatever.
Sure.
Other side, we had movies every night.
Oh, you got to get seats.
Yeah, and then I said, "Oh man, we got to get seats." So I told these guys, "I said, hey, I need a deuce and a half to go with this." You know what I'm saying? I need to do this mission.
Get it
and
done.
So we got it done. So we took all the bus seats out of that bus, that took them like, all the way back to our facility where we're at.
So another little acronym for you
is
CAN point, CAN. It's cannibalization point. It's a junkyard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And like a bus. Our guys were so phenomenal. They could take a bus, make a theater, and the comforts of home would come from just creativity. And
I was going to say, you guys could be in my craft club.
They could. There was times they literally took three or four vehicles that wouldn't run and made one.
We would, and said we just could do anything. And
it was Frankenstein crew. Yep. I love it.
It was night vision. It was radios. It just
anything. To
weapons.
Make it.
Everything.
We were right at the hub of things. So when everybody went by us, it either got to get fixed to move forward to Kuwait, of course, because that's where we main mission was in for Kuwait, and so that's where we come in falls in.
Or it's coming back.
And we were called. And Steve can recognize this too. We were called, my section was called the Volleyball Gods.
Yeah.
Because we had a volleyball team that was phenomenal.
Well, our warehouse section, Tech Supply, I'd argue that with you.
Yeah,
if they
time.
See this.
Was it two on, like, sand volley, yeah. like in the.
We don't have to separate you guys.
Kind of like six to six.
Oh, six to six.
Six,
okay.
Yeah. And right. we dominated things. And then we got into football and all that stuff, too, as well. And that's with some of the other guys.
Scratch your lines in the dirt and make a game when you had downtime.
And, with the movie theater that we had, I post movies every single time. So when got nighttime, you could always see people coming with the headlights. They were coming to watch that movie theater. We'd have popcorn,
candy, I was just
going to
ask, did you have
popcorn? And this is all prior to cell phones or anything. So this place grew by word of mouth.
That's cool.
Now, when we moved forward from our rural, we kind of moved up into what was called the Log Base Echo. It was a central area. If you ever look up a map of Desert Storm, before the infantry, the tanks and everything moved forward and pushed, there was this big area. It was called Second COSCOM. It was our command. We're the largest maintenance assembly since World War II. And we're actually bigger than that because we're all in one spot.
Right, okay.
We had mail, we had phones.
Everything's right there.
Small perimeters over a vast area in the desert. So our perimeter was maybe a mile across.
Approximately, yes.
And one tower in the center. But this massive amount of support, the logistics, everything that it takes to move the tanks forward. And to tell you how small a world it is, I had been just months prior at Fort Stewart, Georgia. I came back, got in Greenville National Guard, did one annual training up at Grayling that summer. And in that November, we got deployed. Right at Thanksgiving, we got deployed.
We did.
While we're in country, prior to the push of all the infantry forward, somebody comes to our front gate, and my nickname in the guard was Iceman from my jet skiing days. And the front gate, he's looking for parts. Well, you need to go see the Iceman. Didn't tell my name.
Mm-hmm.
This individual was co-located with me at Fort Stewart. He had been promoted to division material management, mm-hmm. so head of logistics. And he was looking for stuff for the tanks that he had that were down.
Mm-hmm.
Comes around the back of my truck and looks. And he goes, oh, my God, Steve Barnes.
No, it's Iceman here, man.
And he said, well, you know, and then...
do a little catch-up real quick.
Yeah. And we got him all set with stuff. And they were so mobile that then we got things like wood flooring for our tents. We had diesel fuel kind of potbelly stoves to heat our tents at night. And that desert would get cold.
Cold at night, that good drop.
75, 80 degrees at night is freezing when it's been 140 during the day.
We're getting all this stuff
from these active guys. And then he tells me on day two, we're giving him massive amounts of parts that mm-hmm. we had ordered prior to going. He couldn't find them anywhere else, and we had them. He says, I'm going to give you some intel. You got to keep it within your base. He said, we're not in front of you, we're behind you. The whole division. All the divisions are behind you right now. They're doing range finding. They're practicing how to fight and see your enemy in the distance. So they're firing, shooting, maneuver, and all that stuff. And he says, tomorrow I'll have an update for you. So he comes the second day and he says, tonight, I can't remember the time, but we'll just say that he said, 11 o'clock tonight, we'll be rolling through.
So everybody's running through the...
And about an hour before we roll through, advanced artillery and such is going to start firing up online. And Buck can tell you, I went to command and I told him, you know, it's going to kick off tonight, so be ready.
To get out of the way?
Yep. No, we have our perimeter, so they drove around.
And then outcoming was going
over top of you.
Yeah.
But still, if you hadn't known.
Right.
And the impacts that we heard was relatively close to a double bass in a rock band.
Correct.
And I don't know how they did it, but it almost sounded like, say, a B-52 and then multi-launch rocket systems would fire. And then just an incredible amount of firepower. And I wasn't with Buck at this moment, but I imagine all of us in our tents and such, I would not want to be under that.
Mm-mm.
No, something mishap and something go wrong, we would be hurting.
Yeah.
There's really no oops.
Right.
No.
And then nobody was going to tell you? Like, that they were coming through or anything?
We wouldn't have knew at all because
we didn't know
without
things.
That information.
Yeah. Talk about communication, huh? Yep.
And rotary craft, so all your helicopters were 200 feet and below. Fast movers were all above that. Just the stuff
and just
you learned.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And that's why we were a central hub because fact that, and we fixed things, like I said, I went out to maneuver, and he could testify to this too as well, as we were working on the howitzers. And the guns, they had trunnion caps, and they had to be tightened to a certain standard. Well, they had to over-tighten them because they were shooting those howitzers over to Kuwait. So they, with that being said, if we wouldn't have tightened them down, that mishap could have been really bad for the howitzers, for the battery. So it would have been not good. So we did that. We did that within 2 days with no sleep.
Can say we worked really hard and really well together, and we played hard
together.
Yeah, uh-huh. We did too. I mean,
and back in those days, it didn't matter what section, everybody got along. Everybody was there for each other, from the mess section all the way to the commander.
We're here to help each other. Yeah, because we're all here together.
Steve, I could testify that we are still a close knit.
Yeah.
Still.
Well, that's why I joined the VFW with Buck, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Paul Craig, who works his butt off for us, and he was a cook that took care of a very good cooking staff that we had. Our mess section was phenomenal.
Okay. I'm gonna jump in here with we can talk forever.
Right, and, yeah. Could too.
But when you enlisted and you went over, and I guess this is for Steve and for Buck.
Right.
What was the biggest culture shock that maybe you maybe experienced it differently? But Steve, let's start with you. What was the biggest culture shock that you had coming from stateside?
I really didn't have much of a culture shock because, again, I was looking for that structure and that logistics, and I was comfortable in that mindset.
Okay.
And I was only months removed from being active duty. The thing that, foolishly now we look back, we did dumb things before we actually flew over. You know, like if you're going from A to B in your car and you're in a hurry, you'd be doing 65, 70, and a 55 with the mindset of, I don't know if I'm coming back. What are they going to do, bend my dog tags?
What's up?
We didn't know. Now, troops that have done rotations and everything, they don't go through that mindset. But it had been so long since Vietnam, and you know, Panama and stuff was all smaller. Mm-hmm. So it had been so long since there was something like this, and especially the National Guard getting called up.
Yeah.
That there was, how do we react
to this?
It's
like, what do we do?
The family separation was the hardest, leaving home.
How do they prepare you at all?
Like, no, I got called for advance. On, I believe, a Thursday, and had to report on Friday.
Oh.
Call work, tell them what's up. You're done with work. You're showing up. You're drilling, and you're leaving.
So you sign your name, and you're just there. Yep. You're in, and
exactly.
Whatever happens, happens.
I know when I was called up, I was hunting, and I had, like, four deer already down. And I left that off for my wife. And then, so my thing is, when I was flying over to overseas, I was always worried about, okay, is our plane going to get shot down, or, you know.
Something where you're not in control on the ground
and
doing your normal stuff.
We have no control, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So then we hit country, it's like, okay, we get into this big story building, like a five-story building, whatever, and we're all in there, you know, and then you got, you know, you go make phone calls to your wife or whatever, mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you're in MOP level 4, you know what I'm saying? And
nope, I don't know what you're saying.
MOP level four is you got a gas mask on, you have chemical suits, boots,
and you're on
gloves,
the phone and they call that and say, put it on.
Chemical attack, yeah. And they say Scud alert. Scud alert.
And so she's hearing that, so she's probably dealing
so then all
with
of a sudden the phone drops. And all of a sudden they're worried. It's like, okay, they won't hear from us like maybe 5-6 days before they hear from us again. So they don't know.
They don't know
if
what's going
we
on.
Were killed or in action or not,
right?
Or hit. You know what I'm saying?
Oh my goodness!
Because the Scud alert is what happens when they were sending Scuds over, and the Patriot missiles would intercept.
Mm-hmm. But still, you got to warn the people,
right? So we have to warn us because, and then also too, you don't know for sure what that Scud had in it, chemical wise. So then you're worrying about that. Say, okay, there are chemicals there. You know what I'm saying, or you know, you have debris.
Mm-hmm.
From the Patriot missile hitting the Scud.
Mm-hmm.
And one morning we woke up, and sure enough, the debris almost hit our building. So that's how close we were to
everything.
You know, I don't know if you were aware that our field first sergeant, Vietnam era Marine, long range reconnaissance, LRRP. He was our field first sergeant because he had experience in the field, helping our real first sergeant. And in the first week, our unit was so big, but National Guard, that we had over 360 pieces of rolling stock. That means trucks, trailers, anything with wheels.
Okay.
We had a massive inventory, and they didn't put it all on one ship. So your active components, the 24th Infantry, comes over with their ships, their equipment. National Guard, we plug it in wherever we can. So we're at port. I was part of a security team that rotated. And you're going up and down the dock as these ships are unloading, looking for your trucks. And you had an area with a picnic table in the middle, and you'd drive them to your area and park them in line. And go
just
look
make
for
sure
the
you
next
have
one.
All your inventory in right. Okay.
On this okay. given night, I park a brand new, what would be a bobtail, like a semi-truck, okay. military version. No top on it. Just as I'm parking it, it's not even shut off yet, and a newer 900 series model of a truck was quieter than our old trucks that we had. So I looked up and I saw what I thought was a shooting star, and life went in real slow motion as you go, oh crap, mm-hmm. that's not
that's
a shooting
not a star.
Star. Then you hear the roar of the Patriot. And it impacted about 100 feet over my head. I didn't know the height or anything because I see it. The alarms never sounded for me. I didn't hear them, that there was a Scud inbound. So I park the truck. I see this. As I'm going to get off the truck, I don't even open the door yet. I had my hand on the latch, and something in, I woke up on the ground. I had been impacted by shrapnel from the impact and blown off the truck. I go to our, you know, the all clear is sounded. I come to, we're all clear. I go to the picnic table where we'd rally afterwards. Uh-huh. And Jay Smith was, he's a notorious friend of ours from Greenville area, was the sergeant of the guard that night. And he comes, he's walking around, everybody okay? And I said, yeah, but I don't know what happened. I reached up and I hit my head or something. I don't know what happened. And he was just walking by and he grabs my wrist.
He's like,
and he tells another girl, Laura Heinlein, who became a warrant officer later, take ice and get him down to the med center right now. And as he took his hand off, and I had blood all on my hand. And it was, I had a laceration maybe 2-3 inches. So what short hair I had, they had to shave it all off. And they knew that we were in and out of what he mentioned, this chemical gear, your mop mm-hmm. gear. Mm-hmm. That mask is kind of like the straps on a CPAP. So you're going to be interfering with stitches
uh-huh.
off and on, off and on, oh, off wow. and on. So they used what's called, I assume, what boxers have, boxer salve.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, did it burn? And then they told me, you have to keep a bandana on this. Keep it clean. Oh, that was a whole nother trouble because
yeah.
now you look like Rambo in the movies. It's not part of the uniform.
You're sticking
and
out
you're
like
getting
a
yelled at by everybody. Mm-hmm. And I was only an E4 specialist. And all
enlisted
these sergeants
numbers
and officers
okay.
yelling at you. You had to carry your medical record with you in your pocket and show them, I'm not doing this for vanity.
Right. I'm not trying to be cute out here.
Correct.
But yeah.
Was you ice out there? We was at Half Barrel Botten, and we got word that one of the military units on the port got hit by...
yes, that was it.
And you was hit, yeah. Because fact that was... If we was wondering because fact that I was wondering who all was infected by it, because I wasn't at the port.
So
you
we
guys were...
That's not the night that the barracks there was hit.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
but
about.
That
was
is
you there.
Where it was.
Yeah, yeah. Because we had the barracks got hit out there. And some of our guys were there.
Were in.
At the area. They helped pull guys out. They yeah. didn't get hit, luckily.
I believe it was the only Scud launch casualties
yeah,
of the whole thing.
Yeah.
So it's like you don't just like, oh, that's not my department.
Yeah, kind of like these
I'm not gonna
these drones that are hitting American bases mm-hmm. now. A Scud missile, the way it was described to us, was just a short-range missile that they kind of lick your thumb,
hope
there's the windage, fire it about that way and see what it hits. And of all that they launched, one hit a building that had troops in it.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'll never forget. It was like, I don't know if this will come through the mic. Scud, 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 lots, 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 lots. You'd hear it through the intercoms.
That's what it sounds like.
And then the air sirens would go off. And then they'd shut down.
And then they'd put you in MOP level 4
all
the time. Because those scuds are coming. And said, you know, well, you remember that MA chemical alarm?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
They said it was faulty? Remember?
Yeah, and it was.
It's like they're not
so
faulty.
So we literally had a wonderful, I think Stoneham's passed now.
Yes, he has.
Yeah. Wonderful chemical NCO. His job was to test and make sure things are all clear. And he came back to guys he was close enough to tell us, I'm sure told me, we weren't all clear. There was something there. His equipment tested positive.
But they blew it off.
And nothing.
Yeah.
So now, like, some of us have symptoms of stuff. And
but it's written in papers that it's not.
When it's brushed under the rug like that, there's no
proof. So nothing we can do.
There's no proof of it. Yeah. So now you may not have proof of it, or a lot of us go forward with the VA benefits and say, okay, this happened to us.
So you should do
and
it.
And then they do what they do. They pile records of that. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, okay, we'll give you a certain amount of percentage compensation, whatever.
You almost have to be your own advocate like you do in medical industry today and be your own
that's
doctor.
And I'm going to take this opportunity right here. Mm-hmm. That question just led me back to a thought, Steve, that you were talking to me before we went on air. There was two things that you wanted to make sure, because I'm sure these stories we could keep going.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
And,
definitely.
You know, I guess I welcome that.
I'm just saying.
But in this particular case, there was two things that you wanted to make sure that we got out on the podcast today to help, you know, because part of the podcast, part of the radio station is the fact we want to be community. Mm-hmm. We want to, so start with number one, walk us through, and then, you know, tell us what you want to make sure that people out there, and you're talking mainly to vets, you know, that veterans, that you want to make sure that they know when they go to apply. So could you walk us through that, please?
So whether you have somebody in your family that is the vet or you're the vet, first understand that we have, whether it's broadcast or not, it's an internal stigma that we're all okay, we're always invincible, that kind of thing. And when we particularly came home to Greenville, we just wanted to get home to our families. So as we're trying to come home to our families, they're asking all these medical questions. Are you okay? You have any issues? No, I'm fine. I just want
to go
home.
Everything's good. Yep, everything's fine. Everything's fine.
That makes it much harder when you try and file a claim that I had it. Now I'm having an issue when you
And unfortunately, it was probably done.
And that's documented.
Yeah.
That you said, no, I'm good.
Right.
Not and the part that you just want to get home.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm good.
But that therein is why you're bringing this to people's attention.
And at the same time, and I don't know if it's for current soldiers, but they would also tell you at the same time, if you say, yes, you have an issue, and you are going to, a certain base for medical treatment or a hospital, they're telling you right up front. And this was right prior to Christmas, too, it was summertime.
Yep, summer.
But they're telling you that you're going to be at least 6 weeks delayed getting home if you answer yes. So they're kind of guiding you.
Without guiding you.
So now you get back home, and please, veterans and family members, if you know of a veteran that's struggling, having issues, register them with the VA. Help them understand. Get them with the veterans organization. Every county has representatives that help them with their benefits and that stuff.
Can I stop you right there? That's kind of where the VFW and some of those organizations come into play, is to help. So could you give us a phone number or some place where if somebody does have this, you know, could you bring it to our attention now? Because they could call the VFW, right?
They call the shared VFW number.
The proper place to call.
Or Mock County Veteran Affairs would be the proper place. That's the main thing. I know Ionia Veteran Affairs, they're getting one around now because they've got so many veterans that are reaching out to Montcalm County Veterans Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he gets 20 to 30 calls on that. So it's important to communities and counties to get Veteran Affairs on their records or mm-hmm. to help out our veterans, because they're all getting left behind, technically. A lot of them are.
And I guess my point here is reach out to the local VFW.
And
reach out
keep
to
keep reaching out.
Yeah.
Eventually, no matter how many roadblocks you come up against, you will find the right individual
that
has educated, has advocated, has not made waves, but has advocated mm-hmm. for the benefit. And he's found people that can help. Like Montcalm County has a wonderful service officer that we served with, Trevor Wright.
Trevor, yeah.
For us in the county, or well, I'm not in the county, but for Montcalm County, he's like the main hub.
Right.
And then everything disseminates from him.
And that hub is available through Kent County, through Ionia County.
Right. Yes.
But if you have any, you know,
it varies from county. Muskegon's different, but mm-hmm. in Kent County, you go down to the outpatient clinic, and there's Dakota's his name, and there's a couple other service officers. But first thing you have to do is get to your local mm-hmm. VA and get registered. Get your ID card. Get registered.
So you're not automatically registered with the VA?
No.
No, you're not.
You have to physically go in and register.
Okay. Yep. And see, these are just little things that people don't know.
Well, the moms, exactly. the dads, yeah. the uncles, the brothers and sisters don't know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So for the families, if they watch this, to know, ask for help. Now, a family member can't really reach out to get the help, but can guide the soldier to get the help.
Sure.
But a family member can reach out, go to a VFW, go to an American Legion,
correct.
Talk to them and say, hey, I've got this family member that is struggling with this or that. And it doesn't matter if it's self-medicating,
yep.
drugs, alcohol, whatever. We
rent,
can guide them where to go.
Yeah.
Or they're just struggling with anger management, mm-hmm. family issues, that kind of.
And it's normal. It's okay.
Yeah. Yes,
exactly.
It's an okay
That's
reaction.
That's a big key right there.
Don't feel bad about reaching out, because if you don't reach out, it's going to overtake you eventually. Okay. And so, like you were saying, Dwayne, yeah. it's like, okay, reach out to your VFWs, reach out to your American Legion Post, reach out to I have an Honor Veteran Soldier Foundation. Reach out to me
yeah.
or whatever, and I can guide them
so
to
the
get
right
help.
Person.
Because right now, we're just helping a veteran right now, technically. From Stanton, and he was with the 101st Airborne Unit in Pershing Gulf. Never applied for benefits, never did anything. And he was on the verge, and I talked to him about 3 hours one night, it's been a couple weeks ago, and I said, and his girlfriend says, hey, you need to apply. And sure enough, he started applying, we started talking, he goes, well, I don't think I really deserve that, but it's like, okay, you do.
I said,
you're an amputee, technically, and his he had diabetes. That's how he lost his leg. So I think some of it was towards the being overseas, because he was working with fueling the helicopters and all that stuff, the 101st Airborne Unit.
There's chemicals
so all
everywhere.
That stuff. Yeah, so there's chemicals everywhere on him. So finally he reached out to Trevor Wright, of course, from Montcalm Veteran Affairs. Now they've got him guided. To, you know, he went to see the psychiatrist and all, getting all authorities. And then he needed some help with, he had, his bathroom was really bad. It was a bathtub, and he was getting over top of that bathtub. Well, he's always afraid he was going to fall. Well, the VA, when he went down there and asked for a grant possible, he said, well, we can't get to you probably maybe until June. Well, June's going to be too late. So what our organization did, we helped him out. We designed and helped him with a walk-in shower. And we helped him with a brand new deck on the back of his thing, because the fact that it was rotted. So he needed to get that fixed. So we did all that. We approved that. Well, then I had that approved within 15 minutes.
Yeah. So it's never too late,
right.
is what I just heard.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
It's never too late, no matter what you were in. And
and here's the biggest thing. The easiest way to describe it for anybody that hasn't been through it. Issues that I've had in my years since coming home both times. When you're at mental zero balance, you're bankrupt emotionally. Gotta keep my emotions in check now. When you're that zero balance, start calling. And it was taught to me early and often, and I'm glad it was. I don't care if you're the first call and you're there for me.
Right.
But if I'm not filled up enough, I call you. Mm-hmm. And I keep calling individuals. The individual that's struggling knows when they have enough support. You might just need a friend. Mm-hmm. You might need to call everybody in your phone book. You might need to call everybody in your phone book and connect to your old veteran friends and keep going. Mm-hmm. Never stop till you've got what you need to keep you afloat, keep you alive, and we're here for that.
And it's never too late.
It's never too late.
And I've been honest with you, I mean, I put it off. I mean, I was getting 60%. I got hurt my knee and got partial knee put in. And I was getting 60%, and I was happy with that. And Paul Craig was the one that kind of pushed me. It's like I didn't feel I deserved more.
See, and that's the thing that I can just look at. They train you going in to be strong.
Right.
But they don't train you how to deal with it after. Is that kind of the case?
That's where it came about, where I went and reached out to finally MacCom Veteran Affairs, and they gave me my avenues and what I could do, you know. And now I'm kind of, you know, getting everything around, but I'm still waiting on three or four things yet that they.
And it had been a while since you served.
Yeah, back
and you're so
1991.
Yeah, so now you're coming. Now, Steve,
I've been disabled for 20 years.
Okay, but I wanna touch on the second part of what you were talking to me about.
Sure.
Because I wanna make sure that we fill this up with, and the information is solid because. You had to learn the hard way.
Yes.
And you're here to try to make sure that others don't fall into that. So could you share the second part of what you wanted to?
So we know the divorce rate in the military. You have your Social Security if you're disabled. Please, for the love of Christ, make sure that your kids are taken care of. And I'm sure you can post for them or we can inform them of the forms needed at Social Security office for request for child benefits. My daughter turned 18. I had a 3-year-old son that I did not know to fill that form out till I went through my second divorce. And there was like a 6-year gap where I was not receiving that money to the tune of roughly $20,000+. And the wonderful gentleman at Social Security, who is now retired, apologizes up and down because all he can do is go back 6 months for me.
Oh.
Because I didn't know that I had to go in and fill out one form. My son had a Social Security number. He was my son. I had another child that was getting the full ride of the benefit for the child care. Had no idea. So if you have children, make sure that you're covering yourself through Social Security and getting a SSA 4BC.
BK. So SSA 4BK.
Is the name of the form.
Ask questions.
Yes.
Exactly.
Nobody's
going to give it to you.
Yeah, I'm on the back end of an issue with Social Security right now, and we won't get into that, but... Yeah. No matter how hard things get, if you stay the course, you do your best to stay calm, you seek out those that are good enough friends that you can cuss and swear with and get it out, that then when you're in front of the professionals, the ones that you're trying to get to help you, you don't blow.
Yep.
That's another key for us. We'll say there is nobody normal, but the average civilian... We'll say resting heart rate and all that stuff. It's like driving through town. You're doing 25 mile an hour, you're good to go. When we've been in survival mode for 6 months, a year, 2 years at a time.
Just always.
We're always at 60, 70 mile an hour with the foot on the throttle ready to go at any moment.
So coming home.
We're already at 80,
jacked
90.
Up, yeah.
Yeah, we're all just like.
We term them hot. When they come back, you can tell when they're hot.
Mm-hmm.
And those young men and women, you can't push them into any direction. You have to just be there for them. They will open up. They will eventually.
Go at their pace.
They won't tell their stories, but they'll open up enough to say, something's not right here and I need help.
Yeah. On that note, it's given that there's help available for what's going on.
Correct.
And we had Jerry from the Greenville American Legion, and we talked to him. And one of the things that he said, and I'm sure it's the same at the VFW, the American Legion in Cedar, wherever they go, that if they just walk in, sit down, and even if they don't say anything, know that they're in a safe place. And if they want answers, they're going to be surrounded by people
that has the answers for them.
That or knows somebody that has the answers.
Right.
Yes,
correct.
It's like
correct.
It's between
networking
here.
And friendships, comfort zones, that kind of thing, yes.
And that's where Steve came in to the VFW, is we started talking together. And, you know, camaraderie talk. And I said, hey, you know, VFW has got camaraderie. You know people that are actually in that VFW, and that helps out too. Mm-hmm. And that's why Steven kind of came to our post, is because, fact, one thing is he knows I always got his back, you know.
Well, that's your support system, yeah.
Yep. It'd be technically 3 years ago now. I reached out to them, but I wasn't ready. You know how they talk in sales?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You got to be ready.
So you're talking around 2023-ish?
Ish.
Yeah, approximately, yeah.
I go and I inquire and I start to check. I feel them out a little bit, but I wasn't ready.
Put your toe in the water kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A year and a half, 2 years later, I'm searching for something. Because when you're 100% disabled, there isn't much to do. And everybody has their job that they're going to, and everybody's got their family, and now I'm divorced and I'm on my own, and that's not a whole poor me river, but
you're
I was
spinning.
Looking for something.
Yeah, and you don't even know what it is sometimes.
I don't put myself on an altar that the people in the unit called me Iceman. I had a very vague resemblance to Val Kilmer when I got off my jet ski with my flat top. But when I walk back into that VFW post on a daily basis, especially in the first 2-3 months, and it wasn't Steve anymore. I was longing. I was lost. And from an era that was really good for me.
It's okay.
These guys, hey, Ice, how you doing today? What's up, Ice?
Come on in, brother, yep.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't Steve, it wasn't, what's up, Ice? And it just made you feel home again.
Yep.
And it didn't matter if you were cutting the grass, or if you were cooking a meal, or if you were getting bingo ready.
Yeah.
You're part of a brotherhood again.
Right.
And that meant something. So these veterans that are struggling and looking, it doesn't have to be a VFW, it doesn't have to be a Legion, but find that something. Not just hunting, going out by yourself in the woods.
Right.
Yeah.
Something that connects you to one or two or three individuals that's not going to the bar and drinking, that's hanging out, that's doing, even
animals,
that's talking,
anything, yeah.
Talking.
Yeah. On that note, I'm going to wrap it up, but I'd like to have Buck give us the VFW contact information, if we could, please. It'll be up on the screen on the YouTube channel. It'll be in the Discover.com podcast write-up, you know, contact. But for those that are listening on Pandora, you know, iHeart, Apple, so it's the Sheridan.
Sheridan VFW post 5065. And then also, too, you could always call me if you like to. I mean, reach out, 616-788-4300, and I can get you more information from the VFW for phone number. I really don't have the phone number right with me.
So. And that's fine. Google it. I mean, it's now an adjective. We can say it. Mm-hmm. You know, and you
maybe
talked
Kara
about.
I know Kara's looking.
You know, the Montcalm veterans. You know those, but reach out. You know, don't hesitate.
Correct.
Real quick, I want to point this out. If you call the suicide prevention line, which I've had to use, you're 50-50 best guess getting follow up treatment. Follow through. Call your VA. Keep calling till you get the help you need. And if you're in the Montcalm, Kent County area, please don't go outside of that online, people. Call me, Steve Iceman Barnes, at 616-915-1422, and I will not let you fall through the cracks. If you need somebody to talk to, you're a zero balance, start with me, and I'll send you where you need to go.
Bottom line, there's help.
Yeah.
Bottom line, there's help.
And by you guys helping other people, you're helping yourselves. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, well, it's one of those things that you've lived it. You've been there. And on that note, I'm going to wrap things up. Did you have any closing things?
989-291-9680 is the Sheridan VFW.
Okay, one more time.
Thanks, Cara.
Yep, 989-291-9680.
Okay. And, Steve, can you give your phone number one more time?
616-915-1422. After late hours, text me. Call me if it's an emergency, and we'll get you where you need to go.
Okay. And on that note, remember to buy and shop locally, and we'll make sure that we do more of these veteran spotlights because I think it's important that this message gets out. And, you know, Buck, thank you for following through. Cara, thank you for being here. And again, remember to buy and shop locally.
And support your vets.
There you go.
The Discover Montcalm podcast is produced by content creator Dwayne Weed at DW Video and Multimedia LLC at dwvideo.com or call 231-250-9624.